Hoki mai e te whānau ki tēnei pitopito kōrero mai a mātou o ngā rātonga Māori me ngā puaniani. Kia ora from Māori and Multicultural Library Services, and thanks for joining us. I'm Marta Kiwi, and I'm lucky to be joined by a few of my colleagues and team members to talk about some of our programming on offer here at the libraries over November. With spring in the air, there are a number of events occurring across the city. One such event is Diwali, celebrated by our Hindu community. I'm lucky to be joined today by one of our colleagues, Rima, and Hindu community member Al Kaiji, to talk about the upcoming Diwali celebration. Nō mai kōrua, welcome. And can you tell us a little bit more about Diwali, please?
Kia ora koutou katoa. Diwali, or Ro of Light, can be pronounced as Deepavali, which is celebrated all over India across faiths. The literal meaning of Diwali is Ro of Light. It symbolizes the victory of light over darkness, knowledge over ignorance, and good over evil. I would like to introduce Al Kaiji, who is from northern part of India. And would you be able to explain a little bit more about Diwali?
Namaste, Ramaji. Thank you so much. Diwali is celebrated over 5 days. First day is Dhanteras, then second day is Narak Chaturdashi, third day is Main Deepavali, which is Lakshmi Pujan, the fourth day is Govardhan Day, and the fifth day is Bhai Dooj, where we celebrate our brothers. The Diwali is celebrated as per lunar function, and it falls between October and November, and it depends upon the lunar phase, and it has to be a no moon day
so that people can put more lights in front of the
Absolutely.
House and decorate, and
yes.
it will glow like that's All the purpose of Diwali.
It looks so beautiful to have candles and lights and decorated lights, just like we do it here in Christmas.
That's the main decoration I also like. And I have also heard about Rangoli, which from southern part of India, it's a tradition. We decorate and display with colorful Rangoli. Mainly it is out of rice flour and color powder. And some people even do with flowers. The patterns are quite intricate. And it's a warm, welcoming gesture in front of our house as a display. I remember my grandma doing that, and I tried to do some still at my house, if I can, but I'm not as perfect as my grandma.
Yeah.
Thank you, Al Kaiji, for sharing all your knowledge. With Christchurch City Libraries, there are books on Diwali, especially for kids, all about Diwali, things to make and do by Sapna Hado, and this beautiful book for children is filled with crafts and recipes, fun activities and facts about the Diwali celebrations. There is another book you can borrow from our library for children. It is called Diwali by Anita Amin. In this book, children will be able to discover how a shared holiday can have multiple traditions and be celebrated in all sort of ways.
Te mutunga mai o te pai kōrua, wow, that sounds fantastic. Diwali celebrations this year are going to be amazing. So much to do and experience. Thank you for sharing your knowledge with us, and we wish you well with this year's Diwali celebrations. Next, I'm talking to Pacifica librarian Mel about what's new in the Pacifica space. Nau mai, Mel. Whakamohio mai nei o kōrero. Welcome, Mel. So what new books have we got arriving in the Pacifica collection in November?
Tāla for lava, Matakiwi. We have a couple of new books which have just come into the network. The first one is called A Canoe Before the Wind by Vitali Lafaele. This is about a Samoan family who journeyed to New Zealand in 1962 in search of a new life when New Zealand was known as the land of milk and honey. But instead of this, their eldest son, Vitali, arrived in the era of dawn raids by police and immigration officials and endless racism and bullying at school. Yet he endured, and against all odds, he grew up to become one of New Zealand's most decorated policemen, and his story is an inspiring one of overcoming difficulty with values to guide you through life's challenges. A copy of this book can be found in the Pacific Collection in Tauranga, Aranui and Hornby, and also in the Biography Collection in Lynwood. The second book is called Voices from the Village, published in Australia in 2020. This is a collection of poems and short stories from 39 Pacifica storytellers and writers. The age range is 90 years young to 9 years old, and you can find a copy of this book in Tūranga Aranui and Hornby Pacifica collections. We also have 7 new Tuvalu children's readers that have been added to the library network. You can find these in the Pacifica children's collections in Tūranga, Aranui and Hornby. These are special resources which are bilingual, Tuvalu and English, for you and your children's reading pleasure.
Me mihi ka tika ki a koe e ho. Wow, they sound like some wonderful additions to the collection, so thanks for that, Mel. November is also an important time for Taranaki tribes as they commemorate the invasion of Parihaka. Here to tell us more about it is our paukokikohinga, Julia.
Thank you, Mata Kiwi. Many Kiwis think of the 5th of November as Guy Fawkes Night or Fireworks Night, the night we all let off mild explosives in our yards as the remains of an English harvest festival turned memorial for the failed assassination of King James VI in 1605. But for many Māori, particularly from Taranaki and the surrounding areas, it is the day that the Māori settlement of Parihaka was illegally invaded by approximately 1,600 of the armed constabulary. The settlement was established in the 1860s and quickly became a refuge for many Māori who were expelled from their lands. The leaders were Te Whiti o Rongomai and his nephew Tohu Kākahi. At its height, over 1,500 people lived at Parihaka, and each dwelling was considered a separate marae. It was one of the first places in the country to get electricity, it had a shop and a bank, and was considered to be self-sufficient. However, certain parts of the colonial government began working in earnest to bring down Parihaka and the Māori autonomy found there. In 1879, the colonial government began to occupy land in the Waimate Plains, northwest of Hawea, which they had confiscated from Māori in 1860. In response, Te Whiti and Tohu developed non-violent methods of resistance. Men from Parihaka began to plough land across Taranaki. The government's response was to arrest the ploughmen and send them to jails, without trial, in Littleton, Hokitika and Dunedin. The native minister at the time was John Bryce, a Taranaki war veteran who had admitted that he had always wanted to march on Parihaka and destroy it. When he was sworn in, he began to use his new position to further that goal. In 1880, he built a road to Parihaka, and without prior discussion with Te Whiti or Tohu, had the constabulary pull down cultivation fences to make way for it. Bryce hoped to goad Parihaka Māori into a warlike response and thus justify an armed march. But even though there were reports of troops destroying crops and looting properties, the response was one that the Māori of Parihaka became famous for: passive resistance. Instead of the violent retaliation the minister had hoped for, a group of fencers set about repairing the damage the constabulary had done. In response to that, the constabulary again arrested the fencers, and again without trial, they were sent to jails here in Te Waipounamu. Provocations like this continued, with Bryce ordering surveys of land still under Māori occupation or known to be considered off-limits to the Crown, with the intent to force European settlement on Parihaka. In early 1881, due to criticism from England, some of the prisoners began to be released and returned back to Parihaka. It wasn't long before the quiet resistance of repairing fences and removing survey pegs began again. In answer to this action, a proclamation was announced on the 19th of October 1881 by the colonial government, giving the Parihaka natives 14 days to accept reserves or face the consequences. On the 5th of November 1881, over 1,600 government troops marched from the redoubt at Pungarehua into Parihaka. They were met by lines of small children singing and girls performing the poi, while the adults sat quietly on the marae. These children became known as Tā Tarakihi because the sound they made with their poi sounded like the cicada. Despite this peaceful greeting, the constabulary rode in and arrested 1,500 men, women and children, as well as carrying out vicious assaults, rape, looting, pillaging and burning homes and crops. Te Whiti and Tohu were among those arrested, and they were held without trial for 16 months. During that time, Parihaka was systematically disestablished by the colonial government. They forced Māori not from the area to return home, and restricted the movements and resources of those remaining at the settlement. By the return of Te Whiti and Tohu, Parihaka had diminished in size and prosperity. The government had achieved what it wanted: lush, fertile land without having to pay a single penny. Descendants of Te Whiti and Tohu still live at Parihaka, which remains a symbol of passive resistance. Some years later, both Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. were to adopt affirmative action passive resistance themselves. In 2017, as part of the Taranaki settlement, the Crown formally apologised for the wrongful arrests and imprisonment of the Parihaka men and their leaders, Te Whiti Orongo Mai and Tohu Kākahi, and for the atrocities committed by the constabulary during and after the raid. The Crown acknowledged it was a shameful part of New Zealand's history, which both Māori and Pākehā found difficult to talk about for different reasons.
Tēnā koe, Julia, mō tēnā whakamārama. Thank you, Julia, for that reminder of a poignant moment in Aotearoa New Zealand history. A people of peace, the Parihaka people remain committed to the affirmation of the Raukura. I'm now joined by one of the descendants from Taranaki Maunga who has a connection to the Raukura, our reader advisory librarian, Mike. Kia ora, Mike. Nau mai. Welcome. So as a descendant of Taranaki Maunga, what does Parihaka Day mean to you?
Parihaka for me is quite interesting because I live in Ōhinio, Littleton, and every day I have to walk past the site of the old jail, and it happens to be the school where my tamariki go to. And, you know, like seeing those, I walk past convict walls every day, and they were built by our tapuna when they were brought down illegally prior to the invasion of Parihaka. A lot of people didn't know that, and I've only found that out in recent years as well, that there was two waves of arrests prior to the invasion. And there's a quote from the Evening Post in Wellington on the 9th of June in 1879 from one of my tupuna called Akanehi Himiona, or Kiri Totoa, as she was known. "Depend upon it, Mr. Editor, if the natives had their just rights, they would not want the government to be generous. There will be no war, sir, so long as there is no bloodshed by the Europeans. The Māoris will not be the aggressors." So, and this was in response to the arrests of the fencers and ploughmen. She also happened on the 10th of January in 1881 to release a advertisement in newspapers throughout New Zealand. So the Littleton Times, Wairarapa Times Age, Evening Post, the New Zealand Times, about the ill treatment of Māori that had been arrested and sent to Littleton and Dunedin and Hokitika. She was out on board the Hinemoa, which was a ship, was transporting the prisoners back to Taranaki on the Monday, the 3rd of January, and she came across one of her relatives on board, and he was a broken man, and she said, "What happened to you?" And he told his story about how he'd been ill-treated in Littleton jail and he'd fallen very sick. They told him if he couldn't work, they would throw him in the hole, which was a single cell, literally a hole in the wall in Littleton, and it's still there. So they threw this gentleman, Tepuni Tarua, into the hole, and he got really, really ill, and they shipped him back to Taranaki with the other prisoners, and he asked to be left in Littleton due to his whakama about how he'd been broken. And then she asked him to speak to a magistrate, and he said that he would. The next day she went out onto the boat again to deliver the goods that they were supplying to the boat and saw the other prisoners, and they said, "He hasn't spoken. We asked him not to because we are in the clutches of the government and we know not what they will do to us." So for me, was quite heartbreaking to read. Also quite proud that a Taranaki wahine had got that story out when there was a government embargo and that story being put out as news reports. So she was clever. You know, she went to the Justice of the Peace, signed an official affidavit, got her husband put advertisements in the paper. So they would happily take their money and put adverts in, but they wouldn't report the story. But every day I'm proud that Parihaka existed and still exists, still maintaining that mana and that integrity about passive resistance, but also not backing down. Yeah, and it's still a thriving community. And it's quite good to hear that more people are becoming aware of that moment in New Zealand history. So yeah, just proud to be Taranaki, proud to be associated with Parihaka, very proud to see that movement is still in place and it's still standing staunch.
Ngā mihi nui ki a koe, Mike. Thank you for sharing your kōrero with us. As Julia earlier mentioned, there is a Te Waipounamu South Island link to Parihaka, with the ploughmen being held here in Christchurch at Littleton, Dunedin and Hokitika. If you wish to learn more about anything we've discussed today, please feel free to visit your local library or our website, christchurchcitylibraries.com. Kia haumaru te noho, stay well, be safe.